for a year-end tax-deductible gift of $250 or more to Issues Etc., we'll send you our new book, Objections Overruled 2, Answering Arguments Against Christianity, and a recording of 14 Easter season hymns featuring the Lutheran Public Radio Choir. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Ever since I got bit by that spider, I've only had 1 week where my life has felt normal. That was when you found out.
Botched that spell where you wanted everyone to forget the Peter Parker Spider-Man. We started getting some visitors. From every universe. Hello, Peter.
That's the trailer for the latest Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man No Way Home. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a little difficult to follow, but at least from the reviews in the box office, those who are seeing it are absolutely loving it. We'll find out why as we review this movie with Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
I think I might have seen two or three, maybe two and a half Spider-Man movies that have come out in the last several decades. If I haven't seen the whole panoply of various Spider-Mans, am I going to be able to follow Spider-Man No Way Home?
Not as much as somebody who has watched them all, I guess. So going back to like 2002, between 2002... Sam Raimi made Spider-Man movie back then with Tobey Maguire. Back then to now, there's been 8 standalone Spider-Man movies, like live-action ones. If you add in Into the Spider-Verse, there was an animated film. That one, that now you've got 9 of them, plus the other ones where the character of Spider-Man has been in the Avengers movies or the Captain America movie, then you're like, there's like 13 of them or something. There's been a lot of Spider-Man between 2002 and now. So you're forgiven if you haven't seen everything, but I think a lot of people who have been very carefully following Spider-Man will probably get more out of this film than your average casual Spider-Man fan.
It's doing very well at the box office, and it's getting pretty much uniformly great reviews. Why are people so impressed with it?
Well, it's kind of a relief. Like we talked about this last Ghostbusters movie being a bit of a relief that it actually honored the previous material and wasn't desperately woke, trying to, you know, pander to some different audience. And this is also the case with this Spider-Man film. This is really a Spider-Man film for Spider-Man fans. And I think that if you were a kid back in 2002, then this kind of incorporates all of the Spider-Man live action movie stuff that you've grown up with. So it really hits probably for millennials and Gen Z kids. Like this is going to be tops for them. I was in a matinee showing of this film, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I've been trying to hit matinees because there's less people. It was certainly more full than any of the matinees I've been going to. And the people there, the ones under 30, were going bananas, like clapping and jumping out of their seats and like hanging off of everything. And everything that was about to happen, every reveal that was happening on the screen. And not just like one little group of them, but like consistently through the whole entire theater. Like this was like being at a sporting event and every time, you know, your team gets a touchdown or a home run, you know, everybody up out of their seats. This is what it was like being in the theater for this. I can't imagine what it would have been like outside of COVID times in normal kind of a scenario with an absolutely packed audience, like on opening night. I can't imagine what it would be like. It would have been bonkers. It was already bonkers. So I think that it's definitely, it's not kind of running roughshod over top of the fan base. It actually is a film that cares about its fans and cares about the directors that came before the current director. Like, he honors those previous directors' work. So that's also kind of part of what's going on in this film and probably accounts for it doing so well.
So instead of, as some franchises do when they make reboots, or I don't even know what to call them anymore, a lot of franchises would say, we're just going to ignore the other movies and the other iterations of the superhero. This one embraces them. How so?
Well, this is with the concept of the multiverse, which has been the groundwork of this. It continues to be laid over and over again in this Phase 4, particularly of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Marvel movies. It was kind of introduced a little bit earlier on at the last of the big Avenger movies, Avengers Endgame. But this kind of idea that, and we've talked about it with the TV show Loki on Disney Plus and WandaVision, and there's going to be this, and I guess maybe next year, there's going to be this Doctor Strange film that deals with this. But this idea of many worlds, that there are just all of these different universes that are out there. Now, this is a bit of a clever thing that Marvel's doing, in that years and years ago, Marvel as a company licensed out certain of its superhero franchises, and Sony Pictures got Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. That's another one that's like not part of the regular Marvel MCU right now, but they licensed all these things out like back in the late 90s. And so they're not in-house. So they basically slowly over time, as Marvel has been kind of growing in its popularity, have been trying to make these agreements to kind of bring these characters back in underneath the big umbrella, the big tent of Marvel. And Spider-Man, they've been working on this for a long time with Sony. And what they are able to do, this is kind of a long answer to your question, is what they're able to do with this is, because of these agreements, they're able to actually pull in the different actors who played like Spider-Man in the past, or the different actors who played the various villains in the past. And they're able to bring them all into this film by basically imagining a scenario in which all of these different Spider-Man trilogies and, you know, franchises are actually all happening simultaneously in separate universes. So the multiverse idea, where now they've got like a kind of a crack that brings in these other universes into the current universe that everybody is, like the most recent Spider-Man with Tom Holland as Spider-Man, they can bring all of this together onto the screen all at once. So it has this quality of being like a dream or something. Like you might have imagined this and then you woke up in the morning and you're like, wow, that was a crazy dream. But you're seeing all of the different Spider-Men on the screen, from the three last live action Spider-Men are there, plus all of these other actors who are playing various villains reprising their roles from the previous films.
So how is it not then 7 different movies all kind of collaged together?
Well, the central story is kind of revolving around this most recent Spider-Man played by Tom Holland. So that's the one that really is the central story. And at the last Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Far From Home, which we reviewed, his identity was revealed by Mysterio, and now everybody knows who he is, but they also think that he's a terrible guy. So it's actually impacting negatively his life, and not just his life, but also his girlfriend, MJ, played by Zendaya, and his aunt, Aunt May, played by Marissa Tomei, and his friend, Ned. All of these guys are having terrible things happen. They're trying to get into MIT. They're at the end of high school. They want to go to college. They're getting denied entry into school because of of you know, being associated with Spider-Man, and everybody thinks he's terrible. So what happens is that he has an idea, Peter Parker, that he's going to go to Doctor Strange and ask him to cast a spell in which the whole world will forget that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. But then the problem is he still wants some people to remember who he is, and like his girlfriend and his best friend and his aunt. And then he meddles with it as the spell is being cast, and it all kind of goes sideways, cracking open the meta universe kind of business, bringing in all of these other characters. So it all kind of revolves around him and his secret identity being exposed, and him trying to mitigate that, mostly for his friends, and then having to deal with the repercussions, the causes of all of that throughout the rest of the film.
I was just curious, because I just saw the trailer. Do the other actors portraying the other Spider-Men from the various universes, are they actually played by the actors? Do we get to see their faces, or just their kind of their brand of Spider-Man in the suit?
No, you get to see them, and they're not just, they don't just swing in at the last minute to help with the final fight or something at the end of the film. They're a pretty integral part of the whole entire thing. So they're all in there, and they all get to interact with each other. It's really well written and smart in the way that they do it, because Andrew Garfield, who played Spider-Man for two of the Spider-Man films, The Amazing Spider-Man in 2012 and The Amazing Spider-Man 2 in 2014, he's in it. Tobey Maguire's in it, like I mentioned before. And they really kind of play these Spider-Men who have gone through more things than Tom Holland's Peter Parker has gone through. So they kind of fulfill this kind of mentor role, but they're also kind of, they're damaged in their own way. Like there's this sense that they're dealing with, there's a popular term now, which is moral injury. It's kind of connected with PTSD, but the idea that if you do something that violates your, or if something happens to you that violates your beliefs, that it causes trouble. As Christians, we would say that this is like if somebody sinned against you, or you sin and it throws off the trajectory of your life in a kind of way. Maybe you become bitter, or you lose hope, or you, there's things like this that these characters of Peter Parker have dealt with, and they see the current Peter Parker about to go down the same path. So they actually help each other, and they all complement each other, and they're all supportive of each other. It's a really kind of a bizarre thing to see. It's not a small part of the film. It's a big part of the film. You almost, as I was watching it, because I tried to avoid as much as I possibly could before seeing it, like I didn't expect it to go quite as far as this went with it. And in that way, you know, like you can understand why people in the audience, like I like Spider-Man, and I was getting caught up in it, and I thought it was kind of amazing, and I was like, found it emotional. But if you loved Spider-Man, like this is why everybody was going bonkers in the theater.
You say there is a contrast in the film, the theme of fatalism that's kind of embodied in Doctor Strange, and then an optimism embodied in Spider-Man.
Yeah, so what happens is that the idea with the spell was that he cast this magic spell and everyone was going to forget who Spider-Man was. When everything went poorly and got botched, what happened is the multiverse kind of cracked open like a walnut. And what happened was is that people who knew Peter Parker's secret of being Spider-Man were being pulled into his universe, which included villains. So this is where you get Willem Dafoe, who played the Green Goblin, and Alfred Molina, who played Doc Ock, and Jamie Foxx, who played Electro, and Thomas Hayden Church, which is he played the Sandman. All of these guys start getting pulled into this universe. And Doctor Strange sees this as a big problem and wants to have all of these guys sent back. And they discover that, of course, a lot of these characters died at the hands of Spider-Man in these other stories, and sending them back would mean sending them to their death. And Doctor Strange is like, well, that's it. That's their fate. That's what's going to happen. Don't worry yourself with that. Just, we got to fix this problem. And Peter Parker, a Tom Holland's Peter Parker, then looks at it and says, I don't like that. Like, I want to try to help these guys. Like, what can I possibly do to help them so that they're not villains anymore? So there's this kind of, you know, he's optimistic and hopeful for the fact that maybe he could actually do something to help these characters, these villains. And Doctor Strange is, no, it is what it is. Like, don't try to change it. So this is where you get like this kind of difference between one way of thinking and the other way of thinking, fatalism versus hope.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Spider-Man No Way Home. Pastor Geese teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled The Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. We'll talk about how this all gets done in an hour and 50 minutes on the other side of the break.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Thank you for donating almost $130,000 to Issues Etc. in the past 3 weeks. With 2 weeks left in 2021, we're $63,000 short of expenses. Please make a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of the year.
Nunc Dimittis. In Latin, it means now dismiss. And it's the title of one of the Christmas canticles. That is, one of the canticles sung during or around the incarnation and birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. We sing it during the divine service, and it is the song of Simeon as he held the Christ child in his arms. What does this tell us about the song and about the Christ child? Well, now's your opportunity to learn more. Pick up your copy of the December issue of The Lutheran Witness, or visit cph.org/witness, or visit witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Many educational institutions are governed by the whims of culture and are increasingly hostile to the Word of God. In contrast, Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, provides classical Lutheran education rooted in God's Word for students preschool through grade 12. Simply put, we equip students to stand firm in the faith through solid education focused on wisdom and virtue. We offer in-person instruction as well as live online classes for remote learning. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
We're getting a review of the movie Spider-Man No Way Home with Pastor Ted Geese. I'm Todd Wilkin. Your link to Issues Etc. If you appreciate our movie reviews with Pastor Geese, please make a year-end tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Any size donation is deeply appreciated. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also make a gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. With 2 weeks left in 2021, we're $63,000 short of expenses. Thanks for listening, and thanks for including Issues Etc. in your year-end giving. Ted, it sounds like this movie's trying to draw a lot of threads together at once. Is that why it runs more than 2 hours?
Oh yeah, it's a substantial film. I mean, it's not super duper short, that's for sure. And you kind of can't have it be when you're having juggling as many characters as this, because every extra character you add in creates more runtime. There's this Rhys Ifans guy who plays the Lizard, who's one of the villains. He gets the littlest amount of screen time. Like, they don't really spend a lot of time with him, but he was one of Andrew Garfield's Peter Parker's villains, so they have him in there too. But they can't equally spend all the same amount of time on these characters, and the one villain that kind of becomes the villain of the whole thing is the Green Goblin played by Willem Dafoe. And he is, like, Willem Dafoe in this is just amazing. Like, he's such an incredible actor, and he just goes for it, and he does, you know, like, it's kind of bizarre, like, to live in a world where this has happened. I never expected any of these guys to ever reprise these roles, and I don't know if they ever expected to be doing it themselves. So, like, they themselves are kind of getting a second chance just by being in this film. So it is kind of an amazing thing to see.
How does this whole multiverse idea in any way, if at all, square with a Christian worldview?
Well, this is where I think that the Christian needs to pay some attention, because this thing shows up over and over and over again, this idea of multiverse. I think probably for me, the first place I ran across this idea probably was watching the original Star Trek TV show with the mirror universe, where you have, like, the bad Spock with the goatee and the bad Captain Kirk, and they got all kind of, you know, fight it all out. But for the Christian, we've got some, I would say the Christian has some unique problems with this. And I think one of the main issues with it would be, you can't have, for instance, multiple universes where things are slightly different everywhere, because that would mean that all probabilities would be, it's like the idea of multiverse is an aggregate. So it's kind of like it encompasses the idea of every single possible probability all spelled out in different universes. So you decide, I'm going to walk to work today and not drive, or I'm going to, I'm in a moment of temptation and I fall to the temptation, or I don't fall to the temptation. And on an individual personal level, that's one thing. But when we think about it in terms of, like, our own Christian faith, you can't have different universes in which Jesus was never born because Mary had a miscarriage, or she was killed before he was born, or different universes in which Jesus failed in what was laid out ahead of him and he fell to, you know, Satan's temptations, or universes in which Pontius Pilate decides not to crucify Jesus. You can't have all of that going on because, you know, as Christians, Jesus died once for all. And all isn't, you know, some or only relegated to this little universe here, because then what happens with all of the rest of it? So I think that as Christians, we need to kind of keep really kind of in mind that, you know, while God knows in his omniscience every possible thing that could happen, and knows everything that has happened, and knows everything that will happen, that doesn't mean that there are separate universes for every one of those things.
You started out by talking about how a lot of times the temptation for directors and writers who are handed the baton of a franchise is to wreck them. We've seen that happen. I think you cite the example of some recent Star Wars movies. They were trying to be too clever by half and made movies that none of the fans really liked that much. And in a lot of ways, hobbled the franchise going forward. What kind of message are those directors going to get from the very favorable reception at the box office from a movie that just says, we're going to embrace all the rest of the stuff and not try and deconstruct it in some way?
Right. I mean, this is kind of something that's playing out in real time right now, like across, I guess, various fandoms. But, you know, right now, like Netflix has a reboot by Kevin Smith of the Masters of the Universe cartoon, which was really originally just designed to sell some toys for Mattel or something. And that's super duper, like, vandalism. Like, it's crazy town, the stuff going on with that. Doctor Who is one we've kind of touched on at different times, where they really went sideways with Doctor Who and basically just alienated their original fan base. And, like, by violating the rules that the show itself had laid out as the rules for the show, right? So you see this over and over again. And it's a combination of things. Like, one thing, it might be the social justice warrior kind of ideological right side of history, quote unquote, kind of a, you know, impetus that some people are kind of running down. Another thing might be like Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi, where he wants to subvert expectations and show how clever he is. But this is like a cuckoo bird thing where he as a director ends up in this franchise, and it's all about advancing himself as a director and not about caring about the actual thing that he's trying to make. So he uses up all of the resources of Star Wars while he's the director of the main flagship film, and then he takes off to do his own thing afterwards, right? Leaving a husk of what, you know, was there before he started. So I think that what, you know, this is something that filmmakers have to take a look at. It's something that audiences should be paying attention to. It's something that studios should be watching, because if you alienate your initial, your actual fan base in the hopes of getting a new fan base, you're going to potentially undercut your revenue generation. Like it looks like maybe you're going to double it by expanding a fan base, but you might not do that. This is like a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of an idea. So I think that seeing something like this, where it's super respectful of the previous iterations of Spider-Man, the characters are just working the way the characters should work, I think that studios and executives that are involved should look at this and go, see, audiences do like that. They want to have the, I guess for want of a better term, tradition that's been laid down in the past honored as it moves forward. And this film does move everything forward, but it doesn't do it at the expense of the past. It does it by building on the past in a way that shows honor and care and true love of what came before it.
These films are famous for their credits wherein they drop some kind of a hint about what's next or what else is going to happen elsewhere in the franchise, anything like that in Spider-Man No Way Home.
We haven't talked about the Venom Spider-Man films. There's kind of like a side kind of a thing with this character of Venom, which is this alien goop from outer space kind of a thing. And there's one of the little end credits includes something about that, which may hint at where things may be going. And it really does draw in as much Spider-Man as it possibly can. And I think upon future repeat viewings, people will see even more and more of that stuff. So there is maybe a little hint that stuff might be able to come into it. And then also just more pointing forward towards Doctor Strange and in the multiverse film that's coming out soon-ish.
Finally, any pastoral concerns, especially since these films are going to trend toward younger audiences?
I would say that, like, on the positive sort of end of things with this, the character of Peter Parker, like in all three of the iterations, but particularly in the Tom Holland version of it, just has this real determination to love his enemies, which I think is a positive thing that families can point to in this, that it's not really this kind of sympathy for the devil thing where they're trying to get you to like the devil as the villain that he is. But what you get here is the character of Spider-Man with all hope, desiring for them to be better. So it's not like making excuses for the terrible things that they've done, but looking at a way in which each one of these villains could actually be the people they should be. And this has this kind of sense of restoration and redemption in all of it. So the Christian family that watches a film like this can kind of think about that. And in the here and the now, you know, we help our neighbor as best we can to achieve these kinds of things, knowing, of course, that full achievement of this kind of stuff with faith in Christ would happen in the eschaton, the great hereafter, the last day, and the resurrection on that day in Christ Jesus. So like that stuff is all really good. Now, I would say that the other thing though is if you were going to come across this from a non-Christian point of view, or if you were going to imbibe the catechesis of this film separate from your Christian faith and allow in this idea that maybe all of our problems could be fixed by our own efforts, this would be something you'd want to avoid, because then you could kind of go down the route of like transhumanist kind of things, or I don't know, just this, you know, the moral therapeutic deism kind of track of things. This is not the kind of movie you want to watch without having God in mind and having your Christian faith in mind.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled The Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. You'll find a link to his movie reviews on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Folks, you have until midnight tonight on Monday, December 20th, to purchase a last-minute Christmas gift from Ad Crucem. Order online at adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com. Tuesday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss patriarchy with Pastor Jeff Hammer and divorce with Dr. Joel Bierman, and we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Jesus seeking the lost in Luke chapter 15. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.